Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, April the 16th, 2022. Weekender edition. Labor force closer to pre-pandemic highs, by Mella McEwen. Midland's labor market continues to recoup the losses seen during the COVID pandemic. Texas Workforce Commission figures released Friday showed unemployment in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area fell to 3.5% in March from 4.3% in February. It's also well below the 6.7% reported last March. Odessa fared even better, seeing its unemployment rate fall to 5.1% in February and 9.8% in March. The region continues to trend in the right direction. No one would have believed this region would have 74,000 drawing unemployment at one time, he said, referring to the numbers reached in 2020 as the pandemic began to impact the economy. Now, he said, there's been 10,000 to 15,000 in the region covered by his office, which oversees 17 West Texas counties. A number of those who lost their jobs have gone on to become entrepreneurs, starting their own businesses. Some may work as contractors, and it's difficult to track those numbers. Taylor said he's hearing from his board members and even from his peers at other workforce solution offices about the difficulty finding or retraining workers. Companies are getting creative to attract or retain workers, he said, from allowing working from home to alternating days off. And the need for workers has provided a significant boost in wages. The mining, logging, and construction sector alone paid $693 million in wages in the third quarter of 2021. That's almost twice the next sector of trade and transportations and utilities. The concern is we wonder how long that can continue before it levels off. People are changing jobs for 50 cents or a dollar more an hour. The population is growing, but what is needed are skilled workers. There may be some opportunities in the upcoming generation of workers. Taylor estimated there will be 5,000 high school seniors graduating this year. Some will join the workforce, while others will enlist in the military. Others go to college, and still others leave the area. I've been talking to the colleges. They have young adults going into education and training, but they have issues retaining instructors. They can make more money in the workforce. He continued to urge those hesitant to enter the workforce because of child care concerns or concerns about paying for workforce training to contact the workforce center. We have child care dollars. We have dollars, he said, for training. Use those resources instead of going into debt. It's that same old song, he said. If you have skills, you will be put to work. Taylor said Midland's civilian labor force is nearing pre-pandemic levels. The high in August and March is higher than March of 2021. Of those in the labor force, 100,000 are employed, more than 1,000 more than in February, and more than 6,900 more than in March of 2021. The number of unemployed fell by about 800 and is 300 less than those employed last March. Midland added 300 non-farm jobs from February to March. For the 12 months from March to March, Midland has added 7,200 jobs for a growth rate of 7.3%. The manufacturing sector and professional business services sector each added 400 jobs. Financial activities added 200 jobs. Statewide, the employment rate fell to 4.4%. For the fifth consecutive month, the state has set record employment as total non-farm jobs reached 13 million. Texas added 30,000 jobs since last March. Permian taxpayers pay the most in Texas, by Stuart Doreen. There isn't a region in the state where people will owe more to the federal government than the Permian Basin. There are also quite a few taxpayers in the Permian set to receive large refunds. Smart Asset reports that when it comes to the average tax amount owed, 8 of the top 10 counties are located in West Texas. They include Martin, Glasscock, Reeves, Howard, and Reagan. Midland County ranked 7th. Across the state, Smart Asset showed that more than 2 million taxpayers owed an average of $6,500. In terms of taxes refunded, the region where the average refund is highest is South Texas, Karnes County. The average amount refunded for taxpayers there is $5,400. Across the state, there were 10 million taxpayers receiving an average of $3,300. In 2021, Glasscock and Midland counties ranked 1st and 3rd in average tax refunds. Martin County ranked 4th with an average tax amount owed of $29,000. There were 8 Permian counties in the top 10. In 2020, Midland ranked 1st for taxes refunded, and Martin was tops again for average taxes owed. Midland County sees oil and gas rig total increase by 7. Amela McEwen. U.S. drillers continue to put rigs back to work amid the call for the industry to add more oil and gas production. Baker Hughes said Thursday its U.S. rig count rose by 4 to 693 for the week. Its report was shortened by the Good Friday holiday. It marks the 4th consecutive weekly increase, and the count continues to be at its highest since March 2020. The number of rigs seeking crude inched up 2 to 548. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas also rose by 2 to 143. Texas added 4 rigs for 346 at work within the state, 132 more than the 214 counted last year. The Permian saw 2 more rigs go to work for a count of 334. Reuters analysts said that the drilling increase being sought is likely coming at the Permian Basin. Lee County, New Mexico, remains the most active county in the Permian with 50 rigs. Eddy County has 41 rigs. Midland County's rig count jumped by 7 to 39. Martin County reported 31. Reeves County added 3 rigs for 30, and Loving County added 3 rigs for 29. According to Baker Hughes, the largest weekly gain was in the Gulf Coast, where 4 rigs were added, bringing a total to 98. Activity is at pre-pandemic levels in the play. County tax collection increases by Stuart Doreen. Midland County sales tax collection this month more than doubled compared to April of 2021. The $4.5 million was a 101% increase and also raised the fiscal year total to $23 million halfway through the year. The Texas Comptroller reported that the county collection is 71% higher than last year. It also puts the county in position to easily surpass the $40 million sales tax project in the adopted budget. Last year, the county collected $41.3 million and surpassed its forecast for the 9th time in the previous 10 years. The cities of Midland and Odessa reported increases of 42% and 33%, respectively, in April. RRC rule prioritizes who can receive natural gas in an emergency, by Mella McEwen. Texans looking to keep power to their homes or businesses during emergency situations have gotten a boost from the Railroad Commission. The state's 3 commissioners this week adopted a new curtailment rule setting priorities, firm gas supplies, and transportation during emergencies. Under the rule, human needs customers and local distribution systems that serve human needs customers top the list of priorities for firm deliveries of natural gas. This makes permanent an emergency order the commissioners passed in February of 2021. To prioritize natural gas for human needs. According to the commission, this helped 99% of gas utility local distribution residential customers keep natural gas service during a storm. The new rule also makes permanent the emergency order that made gas deliveries to electric generation facilities a top priority. Human needs customers are defined as residents, hospitals, water and wastewater facilities, emergency responder facilities, and locations where people may congregate in an emergency, such as a school or a place of worship. The rule defines curtailment events as when a gas utility determines that the ability to deliver gas may become inadequate to support continuous service to firm customers on its system, and it reduces deliveries to one or more firm customers. For the purposes of this section, an interruption of delivery or service to interruptible gas customers does not constitute a curtailment event. Prior to reducing deliveries to one or more firm customers, a gas utility interrupts deliveries to interruptible customers pursuant to mutually agreed upon contracts and or tariffs. If a gas utility must curtail delivery, the rule says it must prioritize human needs customers and electric generation facilities first.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with additional articles from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Saturday, April 16th, 2022. Southwest grows passenger share at Midland International, by Stuart Doreen. Southwest Airlines grew its share of the passengers leaving Midland International Airport in March. Southwest increased the percentage of passengers from 46.2% in February to 54.3% in March. It is interesting that the increase in the share of passengers happened during the same month when Southwest brought back the direct flight between Midland and Austin. United's share of passengers in March was 29.14%. American Eagle's share was 16.5%. It also was another month of overall passenger growth at Midland International Airport, as the city of Midland reported 29.6% growth compared to March 2021. Also, the total number of passengers approached 50,000, rare air for the month of March. The 49,384 passengers were the third most for a month of March going back to 2010. Only March 2019, 53,544, and March 2018, 50,438, had more. The recovery from fiscal year 2020-21 also continued. The city shows 272,264 passengers through the midway point of the fiscal year. That is a 58.8% increase. The city also collected $498,446 in parking revenues, which was a 38.7% increase compared to March 2021. The $2.752 million is an 89.5% increase compared to fiscal year 2020-2021. Railroad Commission, spike in new drilling permits taking place, by Stuart Doreen. The number of new permits to drill new oil and gas holes is climbing in the Midland region and across the state, according to the Railroad Commission of Texas. The Railroad Commission reported this week that it issued 557 permits for the Midland region. That was a 33.8% increase compared to December and a 46.9% increase compared to March 2021. The commission issued 1,035 permits to regions across the state. That was a 36.9% increase since December and a 51.7% growth since March 2021. The Midland region again dominated the permit and completion statistics in March. The RRC reported the Midland region accounted for 53.8% of the permits issued statewide. There were 125 new permits issued in the San Antonio area. When it came to new oil completions, the 305 in the Midland region was 60.6% of the total statewide and 250 more than the second place Refugio region. The Midland region also accounted for 33% of the 203 new gas completions. Midland's 67 was greater than the 41 in the East Texas region. Statewide, the breakdown of well types for original drilling permits in March 2022 was 256 oil, 76 gas, 783 oil or gas, 48 injection, and 13 other permits, according to the Railroad Commission. Total well completions processed for 2022 year-to-date for new wells, reentries, and recompletions are 2,907 compared to 2,279 recorded during the same period in 2021.
Dana DeAnne Taylor passed away on April 10th. Cremation arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. No service will be held. A celebration of life will be held in the near future. Donna Lee Crowley passed away on April 11th. Funeral service will be Wednesday, April 20th at Dunsford Funeral Home in Augusta, Kansas. Francis Bove passed away on April 7th. A graveside memorial service will be held in July at St. John the Baptist Cemetery in Rome, New York. In lieu of flowers, family requests memorials be directed to Circle of Life Hospice, Bentonville, Arkansas. Arrangements are under the direction of Epting Funeral Home in Bentonville, Arkansas. Ricky Breitweiser passed away on April 12th. Viewing will be at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home in Midland on Sunday, the 17th, from 5 to 8 p.m. Graveside service will be Monday, the 18th, at 2 p.m. at Serenity Memorial Gardens. David Villalobos passed away on April 12th. Funeral set is set for Wednesday, April 20th at 10 a.m. at Iglesia Pacto de Albanza y Amistad in burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are under the direction of Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Jessica Marie Wright passed away on April 8th. Viewing was scheduled for Friday, April 15th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Jackie Warren Funeral Home. Funeral is scheduled for Saturday the 16th at 11 a.m. at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Midland. Maurice Walker Booker passed away on April 9th. Service information is One Hope Church of Christ in Midland, Saturday, September 16th at 10 a.m. Wesley Dyer of Midland passed away on April 10th. Wake will be held at 7 p.m. Thursday, April 21st at Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday the 22nd at Golf Course Road Church of Christ, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Gardens.
This is Jane, reading for the Odessa American on Saturday, April 16th. Accused hoax bomber has lengthy criminal history. A criminal complaint has been filed in U.S. District Court against an Odessa man in connection with the April 7th bomb scare at the Ector County Courthouse. The complaint details that David Paul Finnegan, 37, is charged under a statute pertaining to false information and hoaxes. A courthouse employee arrived at work shortly before 8 a.m. and found a black tubular device with an expletive written on it, and deputies evacuated the courthouse, surrounding county offices and private business, court documents state. Once the device was rendered safe by bomb technicians, the technicians determined no explosives were present, and the device largely consisted of a PVC pipe, candles, a condiment bottle, plastic grocery bags, a trash bag, and a wristwatch from a Claire's store. According to court documents, surveillance video caught a man leaving the device shortly before 5 a.m. and leaving in a van that bore the license plate of a Cadillac Finnegan was once arrested in. The van was found behind Finnegan's girlfriend's house, and her home's surveillance video caught Finnegan leaving the home at 4:30 and coming back at 5:20 a.m., the morning of the bomb scare. A further investigation revealed Finnegan was supposed to be sentenced the afternoon of the bomb scare on multiple charges, including possession of a controlled substance, unauthorized use of a vehicle, tampering with government records, and possession of stolen property, and two counts of injury to a child 14 years old or younger. District court records report that Finnegan had also been ordered to pay more than $168,000 in restitution the day prior in a case involving a stolen Ford Mustang. Federal court records state a friend of Finnegan's asked him if he wanted to go place something at the courthouse, as he was not going to go back to prison. The man told authorities he declined. On April 9th, Finnegan told FBI agents he found the device in the back of a broken-down pickup and that he placed the device at the courthouse's entrance. Federal court records show Finnegan and two other men were indicted in May 2010 on a charge of destruction of an energy facility. They were accused of removing copper wire from a drilling rig, causing more than $5,000 in damages and a significant disruption. Finnegan pleaded guilty in August 2010 and was arrested to 2 years in federal prison in November, plus 3 years supervised release. He was also ordered to pay $235,000 in restitution. According to court documents, Finnegan's supervised release was revoked in 2014 after he was arrested by Odessa police on suspicion of burglary and evading arrest, and he was resentenced to 6 months in prison. Court documents also show he was sent back to federal prison again in July 2015 for 9 months for again violating the terms of his release. He was also ordered to participate in drug and alcohol abuse treatment, undergo a mental health evaluation, and go through a job training program. Upon his release, he spent 21 months on supervised release and was ordered to reside in a residential substance abuse treatment program. According to Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths, Finnegan is likely to face new state charges as well. This is Jane reading for the Odessa American on Saturday, April 16th. It's not over. COVID-19 cases are on the rise again in the U.S. Yet again, the U.S. is trudging into what could be another COVID-19 surge, with cases rising nationally and in most states after a two-month decline. One big unknown. We don't know how high that mountain's going to grow, said Dr. Stuart Campbell Ray, an infectious disease expert at Johns Hopkins University. No one expects a peak nearly as high as the last one when the contagious Omicron version of the coronavirus ripped through the population. But experts warn that the coming wave, caused by a mutant called BA2, that's thought to be about 30% more contagious, will wash across the nation. They worry that hospitalizations, which are already ticking up in some parts of the Northeast, will rise in a growing number of states in the coming weeks. And the case wave will be bigger than it looks, they say, because reported numbers are vast undercounts as more people test at home without reporting their infections or skip testing altogether. At the height of the previous Omicron surge, reported daily cases reached into the hundreds of thousands. As of Thursday, the seven-day rolling average for daily new cases rose to 39,500, up from 30,700 2 weeks earlier, according to data from Johns Hopkins collected by the Associated Press. Dr. Eric Topol, head of Scripps Research Translational Institute, said the numbers will likely keep growing until the surge reaches about a quarter the height of the last monstrous one. BA2 may well have the same effect on the U.S. as it did in Israel, where it created a bump in the chart measuring cases, he said. Keeping the surge somewhat in check, experts said, is a higher level of immunity in the U.S. from vaccination or past infection compared with early winter. But Ray said the U.S. could wind up looking like Europe, where the BA2 surge was substantial in some places that had comparable levels of immunity. We could have a substantial surge here, he said. Both experts said BA2 will move through the country gradually. The Northeast has been hit hardest so far, with more than 90% of new infections caused by BA2 last week, compared with 86% nationally. As of Thursday, the highest rates of new COVID cases per capita over the 14 days were in Vermont, Rhode Island, Alaska, New York, and Massachusetts. In Washington, D.C., which also ranks in the top 10 for rates of new cases, Howard University announced it was moving undergraduate classes online for the rest of the semester because of a significant increase in COVID-19 positivity in the district and on campus. Some states, such as Rhode Island and New Hampshire, saw the average of daily new cases rise by more than 100% in 2 weeks, according to Johns Hopkins data. As the wave moves across the country, experts said states with low rates of vaccination may face substantially more infections and severe cases that wind up in the hospital. This is Jane reading for the Odessa American on April 16th from the death notice section. Vicki Lynn Clear, 58, of Odessa, died on Thursday, April 14th. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. April 20th at Chapel Hill Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Aubrey Jones is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Good morning, friends. This is Julie reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, April 17th. Runoff for district judgeship is in May, by Kim Smith. With a runoff election just 6 weeks away, the battle for the 244th District Court continues to remain a heated affair, with both candidates throwing barbs at each other. Last month, during the Republican primary, former Ector County Attorney Cindy Weir Nutter took home 45% of the vote in a three-way race with former Odessa Municipal Court Judge Dennis Jones and attorney Lori Riez-Crutcher, with Riez-Crutcher garnering roughly 32% of the votes and Jones only getting 22%. A runoff between the two women became necessary. Riez-Crutcher describes herself as a hard-working attorney with good judgment and consistently questions Weir Nutter's integrity. Weir Nutter was placed on a partially probated suspension by the Texas State Bar in 1991-99 and was investigated by the Texas Rangers and the Texas Attorney General's office when she was the Ector County Attorney. Weir Nutter has described the complaint filed against her with the state bar as a minor one and says she didn't fight it because she was fleeing an abusive relationship at the time. As for the other investigation, Weir Nutter was accused of failing to report employee compensation time to the county and giving out more comp time than county policy allowed. After a months-long investigation, an Ector County grand jury absolved her of any criminal activities, choosing instead to criticize county policy in a rare written report. At the beginning of her campaign, Weir Nutter had said she didn't believe the Rangers' investigation would be an issue. I haven't had anyone actually comment on that. It was all resolved. It was all debunked. I had the opportunity after that to speak with the Republican Party, show you them documents, show them the truth, Weir Nutter said. I think it was a shame that happened. I think some people, including reporters, got caught up in a storyline, and I think it's a shame. I'm grateful the truth came out. The truth always comes out. Riez-Crutcher, who was recently endorsed by Jones, said Weir Nutter's actions since the primary have continued to prove her unworthiness. She accused Weir Nutter of threatening her supporters with lawsuits via several Facebook posts. I think Cindy has trouble accepting the facts. Whether she likes it or not, people are free to state the facts, Riez-Crutcher said. People choose not to re-elect Weir Nutter as county attorney because they have no faith in her, she said. She has a pattern of using poor judgment. She gets upset when people put that out there, Riez-Crutcher said. Weir Nutter contends she is a victim of a small number of Republican Party leaders who dislike her for having a mind of her own. I inform them they are welcome to say bad things about me, as long as they're true. Since we didn't pursue legal action for this behavior last time, I thought it's only right to give them fair notice we aren't putting up with it this time, Weir Nutter said. As candidates, we have to stand up against this. If elected, Weir Nutter said she will always do what's right and follow the law. In the meantime, Weir Nutter, who currently represents children and their parents in child protection court, says she will continue to meet with volunteers to tell them about her qualifications. I'm really enjoying going around visiting with voters and sharing my qualifications and vision for the court. In my opinion, their candidate would be better served if they did the same and simply informed voters that how they feel and if they're more qualified, Weir said. It boils down to this. I have 31 years of experience in courtrooms across Texas. My opponent is a transactional attorney and lacks courtroom experience. I have criminal and civil law experience as both a prosecutor and a defense attorney. My opponent lacks criminal law experience, major part of this court. Weir Nutter said Ruiz Crutcher does not meet the basic requirements of the job. Ruiz Crutcher, who obtained her law degree from Texas Tech, is a partner in the law firm of Atkins, Holloman, Jones, Peacock, Lewis, and Lyon. She joined the firm in 2008. Prior to that, she worked in the Child Supported Division of the Texas Attorney General's office, and she was a legal assistant in a criminal defense law firm. She bristles at the idea she may be under the thumb of anyone. I'm not beholden to the leadership of Republican Party or anyone, for that matter, Ruiz Crutcher said. Everyone who supports her have independently made up their minds she is better candidate, Ruiz Crutcher said. I'm running a positive, clean campaign, she said. The facts are the facts. The election is slated for May 24th. Whomever wins will replace Judge James Rush, who is retiring at the end of the year. Archery, Astronomy, or Family Affair by Ruth Campbell. Megan Poole will be taking her passion for archery and astronomy and passing them on to a younger who signed up for Odessa College's summer camps. Registration for Odessa College's summer camp is now open. Camps will run from June to the first part of August, Director of Community Recreation Christine Williams said. Poole was a pre-kindergarten and kindergarten teacher at Blanton Elementary, but is on hiatus because she had a baby girl just 2 months ago. Having been involved in archery as a competitor in the sport, Poole has been teaching archery at OC Summer Camp since 2014 and is adding astronomy this year. Her parents and brother are all in the sport. It's a whole family affair, Poole said. She said she had an amazing archery instructor that taught her how. Poole said she pitched the astronomy idea to Williams before COVID. Poole went to Odessa College and University of Texas at the Permian Basin, where she earned her bachelor's degree in history. Whenever I was a student there, I took all the astronomy science courses here. I've loved astronomy since I was little. I've kept up with it throughout the years, Poole said. When Williams was asking about camp ideas, Poole suggested astronomy. What kid doesn't like to know more about the stars, she said. Poole hopes to take her astronomy campers on a field trip to the Museum of the Southwest in Midland to go to the planetarium. Williams said 600 to 800 youngsters are expected to join the camp. There will be about 30 options, with multiple dates available. All camps are Monday through Thursday. OC has had a lot of ECISD teachers as camp instructors before. We're back to normal, or as safe as possible for normal, but I'm excited, Williams said. For example, Camp Runamuck will have field trips again, and also the astronomy camp. There will be additional Fab Lab camps. Last year, we started the Fab Academy, and that one was going to come and learn digital design, computer coding, and such. We still have Fab Academy again this year. They actually programmed their own light boxes, learned how to use 3D printers, laser cutters, and all of that, and actually doing the coding for it. This year, in addition to Fab Academy, we're going nuts, bolts, and thingamajigs, which is actual camp name. Our Fab Lab got a grant from the Fabricators and Manufacturers Association International. In that one, they're going to learn how to build a space rover and spaceship. That one's for older age kids, about 14 to 17. And then we're going to do VR, virtual reality, camp with them as well. And they're going to make their own VR headsets and 3D objects, Williams said. Another new camp will be bullet journaling. She added that they are also bringing back co-ed basketball with their women's basketball coaches and some basketball players. Favorites such as zombie preparedness, tennis, and golf are returning as well. Archery, with Poole, is certainly one of the favorites. It's for children 8 to 12. They learn the rules of the top. She added that they always remain campers that the bows are not toys. They're weapons. They use children's bows, long bows, recurse, and compound bows. The lightest bow is 5 pounds and the heaviest is 20. The campers will take an arrow as their arts and craft project and they can take it home with them. The little girls usually like long bows or recurve bows because they can get the arrow further, Poole said. Poole's mother, Tina White, is Poole's assistant and she has two helpers. We teach them everything from safety to fundamentals. Along with the games, we even do arts and crafts and the history of archery, Poole said. It's something I like to incorporate so that the way, if they are actually interested, they have a little bit more background on what they're doing, Poole said. The camp covers the rules, fundamentals of stance, for example, how to properly pull the bow all the way to safety, of what not to do, she added. What got Poole Archer interested in archery is that she always has been into sports. Whenever I got into college, I didn't really have a sport. And my dad was like, why don't you try archery with me and your brother? I was like, okay. And so one day after school, we went to practice, and I've been doing it ever since. It was really nice and helped relax me during finals. It's very relaxing and centering, she added. Although she is on a hiatus from teaching, she cannot stay away from the profession. I love teaching. I truly do. I love showing others what they can aspire to be and help guiding them, Poole said. She added, this is always fun to see the expression on children's faces when something clicks and they like something. Her camp usually maxes out, and the top number usually is 20. We always have repeat students, and even some kids do archery camp a couple of times each summer, Poole said. By the numbers, Ector County, 37,461 total cases, 700 deaths. Midland County, 40,552 total cases, 495 deaths. Texas, 6,785,022 total cases, 87,809 deaths. U.S. cases, 80,440,151 total confirmed and 986,042 deaths. Find out more at covidthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the Ector County ISD COVID dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. FDA investigating Lucky Charms after report of illness, the Associated Press. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is investigating Lucky Charms cereal after dozens of customers complained of illnesses after eating it. The FDA said Saturday has received more than 100 complaints related to Lucky Charms so far this year. The FDA takes seriously any report of possible adulteration of a food that may also cause illness or injury, the agency said in a statement. Several hundred people also have posted on a food safety website, iwaspoisoned.com, complaining of nausea, diarrhea, and vomiting after eating Lucky Charms. General Mills, Inc., the Minneapolis-based company that makes Lucky Charms, Cheerios, and other cereals, said it's aware of those reports and takes them seriously. But the company said its own investigation has not found any evidence of consumer illness linked to Lucky Charms. General Mills said it encourages consumers to share their concerns directly with the company. OPD arrests man following shooting death. A man has been charged after police say he shot 49-year-old Sean McCracken to death following an argument on Friday. Isaiah Dominguez Renteria, 26, was arrested and charged with murder, a first-degree felony. He was transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Odessa Police and Fire Rescue responded to a gunshot victim in the parking lot of the DK convenience store in the 1,000 block of North Dixie at around 8:21 p.m. Friday. They found McCracken dead from an apparent gunshot wound. The investigation determined that the victim and Renteria were involved in a verbal dispute. It escalated to the victim being shot. Obituaries. Julia Ann Leak, Bedford. Julia Ann Judy McCourtney Leak, 91, quietly left this earth on Saturday, April 9th, her residence of care in Bedford. She was born February 8, 1931, in Pocahontas, Arkansas, to the late Vaughn and Lillian Cash. In addition to her parents, Julia is preceded in death by her husband, Bill Leak, brother-in-law, Don Leak, stepmother, Geraldine McCourtney, sisters, Danny Lebo, Donnie Brock, Carolyn Tomlinson, and grandson T.J. Peoples. Graveside services will be held for Julia Ann Leak, Judy, on Wednesday, April 20th at 10 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Jimmy Braswell will conduct services, In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Meals on Wheels of Odessa. You may volunteer, donate, or moodessa.com. Dana Deanne Taylor, Odessa. After a battle with pancreatic cancer, Dana Deanne Taylor passed away on April 10th in Odessa, Texas, at the age of 51. Dana was born to Dr. E. Don and Patricia Taylor in Odessa on June 15, 1970. Dana and her parents called Odessa home all their lives. Dana attended Odessa Christian School, Crockett Junior High School, and she graduated from Odessa High School in 1988. Dana discovered her love of writing while writing feature articles for the Odessa High School newspaper. After attending Odessa College for 1 year, Dana transferred to Texas Tech University to pursue her writing. Dana graduated Texas Tech in 1992 with her bachelor's degree in news educational journalism. Dana returned home to Odessa and worked as a reporter for the Odessa American newspaper and media relations for the Odessa Chamber of Commerce. Dana returned to Texas Tech in 1996 and graduated with her Doctorate of Jurisprudence from Texas Tech University School of Law in 1999. Dana considered her solid reputation as a fair and trustworthy but aggressive attorney as her greatest professional achievement. Dana married local attorney Brett Mauser on March 23, 2016. The two met in the courtroom as opposing divorce attorneys in 2014. They never parted each other's side from that fateful meeting. Dana and her tall, handsome dude road-tripped across Texas, finding new roads to explore, touring Texas bluebonnet fields, and photographing Texas country courthouses. Dana's proudest moments were watching her loved ones achieve their own goals. She is beloved by her cat, Sam. Ruidoso was Dana's happy place. The Ruidoso Mountains called, and she went to Jeep Trails to hear the sound of the wind in the tall pines, to drink her favorite coffee by the river, and to make memories in her Ruidoso home. And Sam. Sam was her faithful and loyal companion since April 2007. Great thanks to the Odessa and Midland legal communities who supported Dana, Brett, and Geraldine through Dana's cancer journey. Dana's heart was touched by the outpouring of love, support, and encouragement from the local family law bar. Dana is survived by her husband, Brett, and her mother, Patricia. Cremation arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. No service will be held. A celebration of life will be held in the near future. Dana's ashes will be set free from atop the Ruidoso Mountains. Donations to the local animal shelter or humane society would make Dana smile. To send condolences to the family, please sign our guest book at sunsetodessa.com. Jane W. Willis, Odessa. God called Jane Willington Willis to her eternal home on April 12th. She passed away at home at the age of 95. Betty Jane Whittington was born July 10, 1926, the only child of Charles Thomas Whittington and Gladys Maxim Osborne Whittington of Bartlesville, Oklahoma, where she lived until completion of high school and worked as a legal secretary in the patent department of Phillips Petroleum Company for 3 years. She moved to Odessa, Texas to be with her beloved father in 1946, who had moved there in 1944. Jane's mother died when Jane was 7 years old, and her father devoted great love and care for her. Jane worked as a secretary to Mr. J.J. Willis in Odessa and later married his eldest son, John Jerome Willis, Jr., on December 28, 1951. They were parents of three children, Mary Jane Laura Ann and John Jerome III. She was a devoted mother and grandmother, considering her children her crowning achievement. She also considered herself a student of the Bible and after retirement enjoyed gardening. She is preceded in death by her daughter, Mary Jane Briscoe. The family will receive friends for visitation Monday, April 18th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. A memorial service will begin at 2 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church. Graveside services will be Tuesday, April 19th at 10 a.m. at the Rose Hill section of the Ector County Cemetery, east of Dixie. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorials be made to a charity of their choice or to the First Presbyterian Church. Death notices. Carol Arnold Arnold Chambers, Odessa. Carl Arnold Chambers, 85, of Odessa, died Tuesday, April 5th. Graveside services is scheduled for 1 p.m. April 19th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Home Chapel of Odessa. George David Carbo. George David Carbo, 67, of Odessa, died Tuesday, April 12th. Graveside services is scheduled for 11 a.m. Thursday, April 21st, at Sunset Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Mark Lane Howard, Odessa. Mark Lane Howard, 59, of Odessa, died Monday, April 11th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Adam Logan Hubanks, Odessa. Adam Logan Hubanks, 18, of Odessa, died Wednesday, April 13th. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. April 18th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Larry Hood is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. J. Kelly, Odessa. J. Kelly left us on April 15th, and our lives are less bright as a result of it. At the same time, we're encouraged by example of life well lived. A native Odessan, J. Jerome Butcher Kelly, was born at the family home on a rainy August 8, 1932. He was the youngest of four children born to Garland, son Kelly, and Dewey Kelly. J. grew up in Odessa and graduated from Odessa High School in 1951. While at Odessa High School, he excelled at football, baseball, and track. His track team won three consecutive state championships. For many decades, the only Texas high school to ever do so. Upon graduating from high school, Jay served in the United States Marine Corps in Korea. He had a stint as a cowboy on the rodeo team at John Tarleton University and lived and worked on a ranch near Colorado Springs. Jay met the love of his life, Georgia Hubbard, in 1956, and they were married on August 14, 1956, at the First Presbyterian Church of Odessa. They enjoyed more than 65 years of love, devotion, and adventure. Always open to new things, Jay and Georgia became avid skiers, tennis players, runners, and cyclists. They skied much of the Rocky Mountains and had one memorial ski trip to the Swiss Alps. They also took cycling trips throughout the United States, often logging hundreds of miles a day. Jay held particular fond memories of rafting trips in the canyons of Big Bend and mountain biking in the Copper Canyons of Mexico and the high deserts of Colorado and Utah. Jay had a host of cycling buddies and was able to continue riding well into his 80s. He and Georgia were fond members of the Permian Basin Cycling Association. He mentioned many young cyclists and was always the guy they wanted to ride like when they were his age. Jay spent 35 years as a dedicated funeral director at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home, which he owned together with George's father, G.C. Hubbard. Jay had a great compassion towards those who face hardships in life. He was quick and quietly held someone in need and had a special place in his heart for young people whose circumstances were difficulty. In this spirit, donations in Jay's memory, many have been made to Jesus House of Odessa or the Odessa Boys and Girls Club. Jay's family would like to thank Daryl Parsons, M.D., and Amanda for their compassionate care over many years. Special thanks also to the nurses and staff of Park Senior Living for their kindness and care. A graveside service will be held on April 20th at 1 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens with the Reverend Jimmy Braswell officiating. Weeping may last for a night, but rejoicing will come in the morning. Psalms 35. David Dean Boring, Odessa. David Dean Boring, 54, left this earth and went to his heavenly home on April 7th. He passed away at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. David was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico on March 8, 1968, to Wayne Cleveland Boring Jr. and Barbara Sue Myers Boring. When David was 8 years old, his family moved to Texas. As a young adult, David enjoyed employment as a truck driver. As a result, he loved to travel and enjoyed visiting new places. He was known for collecting antique items and loved plants. David loves spending time with his family, especially celebrating holidays and enjoying good meals together. David is preceded in death by his parents and his sister, Lynette Sue Charles. He leaves behind to cherish his memories his siblings, sister Amber Bridges, and husband Seth, sister Tori Clark, sister Karma Boring, brother Derek Boring, and wife Rella, brother Jesse Boring, stepsister Carmen Witt, and husband Chuck, stepbrother Zeb Foster, also left to cherish his memories are his aunts, uncles, cousins, nieces, and nephews. A memorial will be held in David's honor by family and friends from their respected locations at a later date.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, April 18th. Muri says school attendance vital to success. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. With attendance directly tied to student achievement, Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Muri said it is essential that children attend school. Texas is a compulsory attendance state where students must attend until high school graduation or until age 21. First semester of this year, attendance was at 90% due to COVID-19. It is a little more than 90% currently, Muri said. The state considers 96% a healthy attendance rate. Quote, in this country, we have a tremendous opportunity for a free and public education, and the only way we receive that is if we engage in it. A large body of research says that the more our children are present in school, the more successful they will be. We've seen that over time, not just in our districts, but across the country, Muri said. Attendance directly ties to overall student achievement and is critical. As a school district, we want every child that we serve to be incredibly well prepared for life. The only way we can do that is if we engage them in the educational process. For most of our kids, that means coming to school face to face, he added. He said there are some students still learning virtually, but they still have to log in and engage. Muri said the first semester of school this year really hurt because COVID was so pervasive. Many students were out of school for extended periods or quarantined. Quote, that affected our attendance across the system, elementary, middle, and high school. Now COVID has significantly subsided, and so our kids can be physically present again. We've seen an increase in attendance in the second semester. However, within the first semester, we were right around 90%. For our district, that's low, Muri said. He observed that during the pandemic, people got out of the habit of sending their children to school 5 days a week. Quote, we see that across our state. Many districts are struggling to get families back into the five-day-a-week school cycle. It may take us the rest of this year and into next year before our families remember that school is 5 days a week and those Fridays and Mondays that sometimes we take off for a long weekend are rather harmful to our kids, Muri said. The district's baseline goal for attendance in 2019 was 93.5%. Encouraging students to return to school starts at home, he said. Quote, our moms and dads, aunts, uncles, grandparents, whoever the guardians are of children, it really starts with them. We're a compulsory attendance state. It's a requirement, and so the guardians, the parents of our children, have the primary responsibility to make sure that kids are in school. Legally, they're responsible for that, Muir said. Our part of that is to make sure that school is an engaging place for kids. We have to make sure that they want to be there. It should be interesting. It should be inviting. It should be welcoming for students, he added. School also should be purposeful for students, a place where children can clearly see the purpose of their education and how their education will help them become successful with whatever they choose to pursue as an adult, Muri said. Quote, at the end of the day, It is a legal requirement for parents to make sure that their kids are in school. Again, we're a compulsory state. So, a variety of ways are things that we have to do from a school perspective, but most of this is the parent making sure that the kid is at school every day, he added. General education students are required to be in school until they graduate high school or until they are 21. He noted that ECISD has a variety of programs to help keep children in school. Quote, "Our social workers are available to help and support parents. If they are struggling to get their kids to come to school, we do that. Counselors at each of our schools are available for parents to help them," he said. When students become truant, counselors will meet with the students one-on-one to talk about the issues they may be facing. Quote, "Sometimes children are truant because the family needs them to work, so it could be a financial situation. Our social workers can help connect families to community organizations to ensure that kids can still come to school. That there can be a variety of reasons. Sometimes mental health issues get in the way. Sometimes motivation gets in the way. But our counselors and social workers are really the front line to help a lot of these kids and families ensure that they are successful at their school attendance," Bury said. Texas funds its schools based on a daily attendance rate. Quote, "I don't like to tie kids to money, but yes, that is how we are funded in Texas. So a low attendance rate affects opportunities for students. But I think the bigger reason for me personally to advocate for attendance of our kids is the tie to success. The data are very clear. When kids are regularly attending school, they will be more successful in school and therefore more successful in life. So that's the primary message that I think we need to send," he said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.